drive the amazing golf ball whacker guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Golf Picks with the Plotniks, presented by Bet the Farm Podcast. I am Dino the Pig, and I'm joined by the farmer, my brother, Jared Plotnik, coming off of a very anticlimactic Memorial Tournament. Billy Horschel decides to run away with it and wins by four strokes. My lone pony, Daniel Berger, a few shots back on it Sunday, but Horschel just had too much leeway, runs away with it. No ponies on our end. And you got a guy who runs away with the tournament by four strokes. So, like we always like to say, on to the next. And we are going to the 2022 Canadian Open. This is the RBC Canadian Open, not to be confused with the RBC Heritage. So we're headed over north of the border to Canada. We're going to Toronto. And it's Ontario, Toronto. I always get confused with Canada and the geography there. But before we do that, it's been a really wild week this week in the golf community with the LIV Tour taking place. And this is their inaugural week. Their first tournament is in London this Friday. As we're seeing, guys are trickling in to the field over there now that the USGA has said that they are going to allow players on the LIV who are qualified to play in the US Open to play. So it's opening up a can of worms for guys to go play over there, take all that Saudi money, and still be able to play in majors while they have eligibility. So Jared, before we jump into this Canadian Open, because it's going to be a really interesting week to try to handicap some players this week, because it's extremely top heavy. You've got about six players in the top 25 of the official world golf rankings. And then after that, it is Korn Ferry Tour. So before we get to that, I just wanted to know your thoughts, and we don't have to get political, just on this whole saga with the LIV Tour.
I mean, I don't know. It gives me another, another golf league to bet on. So that's the way I look at it. It gives me another option. So I like it. I mean, I don't really get into all the politics and whatnot. I can't fault anyone that wants to go make more money, especially towards the tail end of their career, set up their whole family, if someone's offering it to them. So good for them. And good for me. Now I have another league that I can handicap and be profitable in.
Yeah. I kind of have the same sentiment. I believe in the human rights part of it, but at the same time, you know, you could say that about almost any company out there that, you know, where all the blood money that they like to say, you know, where it's coming from in so many different companies and organizations and governments or across the world. And, you know, you could say that about pretty much anything, sports leagues, other teams that have, you know, like, for example, one of the Saudi head guys is like the chairman of Newcastle. And you don't really necessarily, I'm sure that it's been talked about, but you don't see people necessarily protesting it the way that people are with this tour. But that is also because they're creating their own league, and it's completely competing with the PGA Tour that has been around for, you know, pretty much hundreds of years at this point. So I'm in the same boat. I can't fault anybody that wants to go play over there, especially if you're going to be able to play in majors. I almost kind of, in a sense, think you're dumb if you don't, but I'm not going to hold them to it. So yeah, it just makes handicapping on the sports gambling side of things a lot more interesting. So let's talk about some gambling and get into the RBC Canadian Open. And maybe we'll even talk at the end about some LIV, the first tournament in London, bets as well. So we're headed, like I mentioned, up north of the border to Canada at Royal St. George's. I keep saying Royal St. George's Golf and Country Club. It's a 7,000-yard par 70 played on bent grass greens. Now, the interesting thing about the Canadian Open that I want to make sure I'm clear about up front is that they're playing at St. George's here this year. They didn't play the last 2 years because of COVID, but before that, they bounce around in Canadian courses, and they've never played St. George's Golf and Country Club. So they had been previously playing at Hamilton, at Glen Abbey, Royal Montreal. Those are some of the few that we've seen. The last time they played at St. George's was in 2010, and Carl Peterson won that tournament, who's now on the, you know, the Champions Tour. So we're probably not going to have much to draw off of in terms of recent course history, but, you know, we at least have a little bit of a sense of, you know, how the course may play. So your reigning champion of the Canadian Open was in 2019. That's Rory McIlroy. He won at minus 22. I believe he won by 7 strokes, completely ran away with the tournament. Dustin Johnson in 2018, minus 23. That was at Glen Abbey. And then Johnny Vegas, back-to-back champion at Glen Abbey in 17 and 16. And then in terms of popular names, Jason Day won at minus 17. Now, I mentioned all those names. The only guy that's going to be playing this week, teeing it up, is Rory McIlroy. So the other interesting part, and I'll get into the field in a second, is the big narrative this week is probably going to be, you know, when you're talking about trying to build a card or DraftKings or matchups, whatever, is the Canadians in the field. So the head Canadians headlining this course, Corey Connors, Adam Hadwin, Mackenzie Hughes, Adam Svensson, Nick Taylor, Roger Sloan, and Taylor Pendrith will be the Canadians on the in the field this week. So, all right, initial thoughts on the course, how you're going to build your card, and your, you know, that's just the whole betting sequence of events that you're going to be looking at this week.
Yeah, overall, just a whack week. Just very weird with all the withdrawals and top heaviness and week before a major. A lot of variables in play here. So, I mean, but when in aspects to the course itself, just seems like a tight course where if you miss fairways, it's going to be penile. They really grew the rough up and small greens. So kind of like a Pebble Beach feel to it. So got to be really good with the irons. 5 par 3s here, which is odd for a course. And a lot of them are up in that 200-yard range. So, again, good long iron play. I feel like 3 of the last 5 courses have had a very similar handicap to them, with this one just being with smaller greens as well. So I'm going to be looking for – I mean, you got to hit fairways here more so than usual. You'll see a lot of guys clubbing down and have a lot of long irons into greens just because it's a shorter course and they can get away with it. I mean, it's not as short as it sounds being 7,000 just because, again, there's an extra par 3 and one less par 5. But all in all, kind of what I'm looking at and how really I'm going about this week. I mean, I like I was telling you beforehand, I was like, and we're doing this on Wednesday night. We normally do it on Tuesday night, which is everything going on. I wasn't ready. I wasn't prepared. I still haven't officially put in my top bets yet, but I'm pretty sure what I'm about to go with. I got a top heavy card with 2 guys near the top and like 3 long shots. So it's what I'm going to ride with, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So you mentioned all the withdrawals this week. Let's talk about those. The first withdrawal that was marquee of a name was Luke List. Kevin Chappell withdrew. We had Pat Perez, Adam Shank. And then once the news came out recently about the LIV guys being able to play in the US Open, then you saw Patrick Reed commit to the LIV. So he withdrew. Then Nate Lashley withdrew and CT Pan as well. So 4 of those names were kind of guys that maybe potentially could have made the card this week, but it looks like they're going to go, I would assume, and this is speculation because the only one that's fully committed is Patrick Reed so far, but I assume some of those guys are probably going to be heading overseas to play in that tour, especially guys like Pat Perez later in his career, and CT Pan for sure is going to be, I would highly assume. So, all right, well, let me talk about the course a little bit. I know you mentioned a few tidbits, but yeah, let's talk about St. George's Golf and Country Club. Going to be some skinny fairways this week. It's 7,000 yards, but it's actually kind of a long course because there's 5 par 3s. So a lot of the par 4s are going to be a lot longer. So it's still – and 4 of the par 3s are over 200 yards. So it's going to be a little bit – it seems like it's a short course, but it's not going to play as short as it sounds. It's also tree-lined, so it's kind of a club-down course as well. There's going to be angles that you're going to not want to take on, as well as rough that is speculatory as going to be a little bit penile, but we'll see how that plays. We hear that often, especially at courses that we don't see normally on the PGA Tour. Doesn't necessarily come to fruition. A lot of bunkers here, especially around the greens. So on top of that, the greens are really small. So the square footage is a lot lower than the PGA Tour average. So small greens, a lot of bunkers everywhere, tree lines, skinny fairways. Going to be a little bit of trouble scrambling around the green play, bunker play. I think that that's going to be really interesting. I think that if the rough isn't as penile, the bombers, you know, they could attempt to bomb and gouge and The other thing is that there is some rain expected. So with lift, clean, replace, you know, it's going to be hard to club down when your ball is not getting any rollout. So just a few things to think about. But like I mentioned, because the greens are a lot smaller and it's going to, you might be in rough a lot of times because of the skinny fairways, GIR percentage and approach play could be extremely important as usual. And yeah, just some scrambling. The other thing is there's three par fives, but those are all three going to be really gettable. They all three should be reachable playing below 570 yards. They all have an extremely high birdie and eagle rate, at least from what we've seen in the past. And that was, you know, over a decade ago. Now guys hit the ball longer, farther than ever. So I would expect a little bit more of the same. And that's pretty much it. So the things I'm focusing on are off the tee play, approach play, around the greens, guys that play long par fours well, have good proximity from 200 plus yards. You're going to have a lot of long irons, especially with the club down options. And you also factor in with the three par fives, all going to be gettable. Want to have guys that are good with proximity with their longer clubs. And I think that it could, there's always a good chance that some of these courses, especially with when we go look at how the Canadian Open has played in the past, that it could be a birdie fest. So I want to take guys that have a good birdie or better percentage. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the weather. I mentioned some potential rain. That looks like it's going to be coming early Thursday morning. That could soften the course up. So if you're looking at waves, I think Thursday morning might actually be the Thursday PM waves might be the beneficial ones. There's also going to be a band of wind coming through throughout the day, 9 to 10 miles per hour coming in later in the day with about 20 mile per hour wind gusts. And it's going to be 50 to 60 degree weather all weekend. So, or all week, I should say, really. So it's going to be cold, windy. Those are going to be tricky conditions. Friday looks like it's going to be really nice, sunny, 10 mile per hour winds in the high 50s, 60s. Saturday, we get some calm weather in the 60s and 70s. I think that looks like the most scoreable day of the week, move-in day, hashtag move-in day. And then Sunday, more projected rain, in particular in the morning. So going to be also really cold, rainy, a little bit windy. Going to be some interesting conditions out there. So we'll see if we have any potential, you know, breaks, rain delays throughout the weekend. But I don't necessarily think the weather is going to make a big factor. But hey, I've been wrong before, and I'll probably be wrong again. Weather is not predictable on today's world. So, all right, let's talk about the field and get into the bets. At the top of the board, Scottie Scheffler, world number one. Rory McIlroy, both of them are at 9-1. Justin Thomas, Cam Smith, Matt Fitzpatrick, Sam Burns, Shane Lowry make up the 10-20 range. And from 20 to 30, we've got Corey Connors, Tyrrell Hatton, Tony Finau, and Harold Varner III. After that, woo, gets pretty ugly. So let's talk about the top of the board. And I know you mentioned there's some guys at the top you like, so let's get right into it.
Yeah, that was pretty much my debate all week. Once you saw some of the news start coming out, I mean, of course, I've talked about the last 2 weeks. I was going to have interest in Patrick Reed. He was around 50. Once he withdrew, it really isolated for me, which is extremely rare. I wanted to isolate the top of the board. I took a really, really long look at Rory McIlroy. I almost made it Rory McIlroy in like two bombs as my whole card at 10-1. But the more I debated it, thought about it, then he dropped down to 9-1. May not sound like a big difference, but that's 10% move just like that. And I saw that his caddy's not there. You got the major next week that he's looking forward to. But everything, I mean, that I look for in Rory, that I'm looking for in this course is what Rory McIlroy does well. Excuse me there. And so I decided against him when push came to shove. It was either going to be him or take two more stabs near the top over here. And I decided to go with two more stabs, and it should be no surprise to anyone where I'm starting my card. I have to do it. I think this would be a perfect spot to get your first PGA Tour win with Matt Fitzpatrick at 16-1. I mean, I could talk about everything I've talked about a lot of the weeks where I take him, but I mean, last week, again, ball guy gains 4.7 ball striking in only two rounds and somehow loses 7.6 putting in two rounds. Matt Fitzpatrick, a notorious, really good putter, losing 7.6 strokes in two rounds, the worst of his career, which shouldn't even be surprising. He was second worst in the field putting. Someone else lost 8 strokes putting, and that was in four rounds.
And so he almost was the worst putter of the whole tournament in only two rounds. So how bad he was, but the ball striking being there. These are the type of tracks that Fitzpatrick plays well. Short courses. I mean, everyone talked. I was reading that like Valderrama. I mean, I'm not a big European tour guy. I'm not going to pretend it, but I was hearing someone who was just talk about a lot of the big courses that he's won over in Europe. And I mean, he's won, it's not like he's like, he hasn't won on the PGA tour, but he's won like seven events over in Europe, including Valderrama, where like he's playing in the toughest European tour fields. I mean, these are fields with the same kind of guys, Rory McIlroy, all the Europeans that go over there to play. So, I mean, and very good comp courses. His numbers are all there, and I think it would be pretty apropos for him to win going into a major, and then the hype train start at where he won a junior amateur tournament, which is where they're playing next week, and which he did. So all in all, really short number. I hate taking this, but in a field like this, I'm avoiding the mid-range completely. I think there's just no point in it. Personally, for me, it's not my cup of tea to take Harold Varner's at 30-1. So give me the elite players, and I'll start with Matty Fitzpatrick at
16. Funny enough, you and I, we didn't talk about our bets prior to putting our cards together this week, but we tend to see the board very similarly. I looked at everything, and that's why we didn't even talk about recording yesterday, because I think we both knew that it just was not feasible to put together an outright card quite yet. I needed to see, because at that point, like, I could have taken some of these guys, they could have withdrew, or people ahead of them could have withdrew, and their odds would have, like, in both ways, it could have gotten better or worse. And like, I just didn't want to put myself in that position. So that being said, I also started my card with Matt Fitzpatrick. I do not ever bet on this guy, but like you always mention, we're not on U.S. soil, so that always is beneficial for him. Elite iron play, I think that's going to be massive for him this week. He's gained strokes on approach in 13 straight events. He gained 2.3 strokes on approach last week. You mentioned the terrible putting week. Complete outlier, not going to put much into that. He just has the perfect game. He's great off the tee, ranks fifth in the field, strokes gained off the tee in the last 50 rounds. Phenomenal short game. And one of the narratives I'm going to ride this week is guys that play really well in tournaments the week before a major. He finished runner-up at the Wells Fargo before the PGA this year, and fifth at the Valspar already before the Masters in 2021, had two top tens before major weeks as well. And another thing, considering the fact that he won the U.S. Amateur in 2013 at Brookline, which is where the U.S. Open is going to be held next week, and I actually went to go look at the leaderboard that week. Two guys that finished top 10 that week, also in this field, and also right around the same numbers, Scottie Scheffler and Corey Connors, both at top 10 finishes. He beat both of them at Brookline. I think he'll be looking to have a big week of momentum heading into the U.S. Open next week at Brookline. So two narratives I'm going to ride this week, along with all the numbers that back it up. So I'm on Matty Fitzpatrick as well. And, you know, just talking about the other guys in that range, I don't know how you could take Cam Smith at 12-1 or Rory and Scotty at 9. That's just not the way I bet. And like you mentioned, I mean, there's only five guys from 22 to 40-1. So there is no middle range. And once you get beyond 60, which is Brendan Todd, and that guy should probably be 120-1 normal tournament. After that, you're literally looking at Korn Ferry, Torres, guys, everybody. There's got to be 35, or no, it's probably like 70 to 80 guys that are above 100-1 this week. So just kind of absurd. And I'm going to trust the top of the board in a really top heavy field. So yeah, that's why I'm starting with Fitzpatrick. And I kind of feel like we're both on the same guys at the top end of the board, but I'll let you take it next.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, again, was debating. I just wasn't going to get to Scotty at 9. He's without his caddy too. Wasn't going to get to Cam. I don't really like Cam, where when you miss fairways, you're out of that thick rough. And but I decided to go back to the well with early season heartbreak. Luckily, I've had like five heartbreaks since then, and some more painful than that one. So it was easier to do. To head back to Shane Lowry at 18-1, who let me down at the Honda Classic when we thought we had it, and Sepp Straka just stole the 30-1 card right out of our hands, going birdieing three of the last five. The weather played a little role in it as well, but all in all,
I'm back to Shane Lowry, and the guy's just playing amazing. Him and Fitzpatrick both due for wins, and no better place to get it in such a weak field at courses that just really fit their strengths, what they're doing well. I mean, the guy is just playing so good all around. It's just, I mean, his putting's been great. That's really why he's taking this leap. I mean, he had he went on a run of just of what, five top 15s in a row, including three top threes, 23rd and 32nd. I mean, he's just playing just really good golf right now. And again, another guy that does struggle to win the States, but we're in Canada. So Shane Lowry, I mean, it's not much more for me to really have to say. You go look at the numbers and how he's playing. And in this field, I'm going to take a stab at him.
Yeah, I'll be able to do the numbers for you so everyone doesn't have to go look for themselves, because I'm on Shane Lowry as well. And I was very torn between Lowry and Hatton. And yesterday, I just couldn't pull the trigger on anything yet. Was going back and forth, reading everything about the LIV. And Lowry was at 20 and Hatton's at 28. I fucked up. And today, you know, with everything that went on and some of the withdrawals, Lowry to 18 and Hatton got steamed all the way to 22. And I just didn't want to lose all that value on Hatton. So decided to go with Lowry instead. And I just truly believe he's the better player coming into this anyways, probably arguably the hottest player on tour without a win as of late. I mean, that probably goes without saying based off of the numbers. I mean, coming into this week, in the last 24 rounds, which would be the last six tournaments, just looking at the numbers and not even just his finishes, ranks fourth overall in total strokes gained, second on approach, ninth putting, first on par fours from 450 to 500 yards, second in proximity from 200 plus yards, 16th in birdies or better gained on the field, and 14th off the tee. I mean, literally my whole model is everything that he is absolutely top 10 at in this entire field. And even better than that, elite. And, you know, he's top one and two in a few of them, especially approach play got me excited as well. So all those reasons are certainly why I'm behind him. I wrote down, you know, the recent finishes as well. One finish that I did love was the third place finish at the RBC Heritage, which is, you know, ironic because we're playing RBC sponsored event this week, but RBC Heritage, a great comp course for the setup that we're going to have this week. So that excited me. He's also played well in Canada in his career, had a runner-up finish at the RBC Canadian Open in 2019 and 12th place finish in the 2018 event. And yeah, ranks, I talked about the putting and ninth in the field over the last six events, but, and he ranks 24th in the field in putting on bank grass over that same span as well. Now it's not the same span. It's the last six events that they played on bank grass greens versus the last six events in general. So ranks 24th there. So I like that. He's got a good feel for the greens. Wind's coming soon. Shane Lowry, sugar tits, shake them for me. 18-1.
Yeah. I mean, again, not really overly like in love with anyone here. I'm not a Hatton guy. I get him wrong all the time. I don't like him where he can just really rely on those irons and where he doesn't get in trouble off the tee with bad rough, which is what we have here. Finau really caught my eye. I almost went to him, but seeing him at 22, I'd just rather go with Shane Lowry. He's been a lot more consistent recently with his all around game. So, I mean, I don't know about you. I'll defer to you, but I got nothing to the hundreds. When you take, for me personally, my strategy, when I have a 16 and an 18, which I don't think I've ever had, two guys under 20, that's pretty much my whole card. I took three long shot stabs, and that's me calling it a week.
Yeah, no, I decided to just do a few at the top of the board and was able to catch a Corey Connors at 25-1 this week. Obviously, Canadian native, so I think he's ready to get off the schneid. He's been pretty bad in Canada, but he's riding the best form of his career right now. And he's never played at Royal or at St. George's yet on tour in all those Canadian events that he's played at. But he's coming in gaining over 8 strokes on approach at the Memorial. The irons could not be any more locked in. He hasn't lost strokes gained off the tee, which I know you just talked about with guys like Hatton. This guy hasn't gained strokes, lost strokes, excuse me, off the tee in over 30 straight events. That dates back to February of 2021. And that tournament that he lost strokes, he lost 0.4 strokes. I mean, this guy is just unreal off the tee. He hits fairways, he hits it far. So I think that's going to be huge this week. And he's phenomenal with his long irons, ranks 13th in the field in proximity from 200 plus. I think it's going to be huge this week. I mean, he's a terrible putter, and it's always what you're going to be hanging your hat on when it comes to watching Corey Connors try to, you know, win it when he's in contention. But he's not overly awful on bank grass. So that's something that's played to his strength in and around the greens in his career. So I'll just take that for what it's worth. And lastly, another guy who plays well the week before majors, you may recall 2019 when he Monday qualified into the Valero Texas Open and then won the Valero Texas Open the week before the Masters just to qualify to get into the Masters. I mean, that's called stones right there. So love that he, you know, could be motivated the week before a major to get, you know, get another win. That's the last time he's won a PGA Tour event. So for all those reasons, Corey Connors, 25-1, luckily got an odds boost on that one too, because he's sitting at 20 at most places right now. But I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't even know about that. You were like, I'm thinking about Connors odds boost 25. I was like, you know what? I wanted to only take guys at the top this week. I only bet on four guys, so I knew I could afford it based off of how I allocate my funds each week. Know compared to last week, where in the last few weeks we've been having all long shot cards, having 6 to 8 guys on my card. Now, you know, a four person, you know, consolidated card, I'm able to afford it. So I went with Connors 25-1. And while I'm at it, my long shot of the week is 50-1. That's my long shot of the week. That's how bad I think this field is going to play, and which all just means that like some random guy is just going to go bonkers this week, like David Lipsky or some shit. But my last bet is going to be Keith Mitchell, 50-1 odds. He is in unbelievable form as well, has some really great finishes. Let me just go look at the finishes real quick. Just finished 18th at the Memorial, had a 13th finish at the Players, top 10 at the Honda, top 10 at Phoenix Open, 12th at Pebble, top 10 at Sony Open, third place at CJ Cup. That's all just on this season alone. So that's 4 top 10s and 7 top 20 finishes. So he's really close to putting it all together. And now he's going to be, you know, in a pretty ugly field. So I think that he's really close. And we know that he can win. He's won on the PGA Tour before, just a few years back at the Honda Classic. I think that there's not as much water here, but I think the course could play similar to Honda. The water is obviously going to be a big factor. But let's talk about what parts of his game are just on fire right now. He bring in the last 50 rounds, second off the tee, 14th putting, fourth on par fours from 450, 500 yards. Like Jared mentioned, 7 of those on this course, and 12th in birdies or better gained. That's like a big stat that I love, especially for a guy like Keith Mitchell, because he can score. And I think that at this type of event, scoring is going to be really important, especially I always find that these like Korn Ferry Tour field-esque events, scoring is just so important, because that's really what, like, if you go look at Korn Ferry Tour finishing numbers, they're always extremely low, really competitive. So I always think that you got to be really good at scoring. And I don't think that this course is going to play overly hard, even though, you know, there's a lot of factors that can make it, like the rough and the small greens and the bunkers. But sometimes we say that and guys go out there and just go nuclear. These guys are just so good these days. So yeah, the other thing I love, I mentioned he's great off the tee, but he bombs the ball off the tee. So if the rain picks up, like I mentioned, and the course softens, where it's going to be if they make it lift clean replaced, and you're going to have to be really long off the tee, benefits him. Or if the rough isn't as penile as everyone thinks it's going to be, you know, he could just utilize that strength or that as a strength off the tee and just bomb the ball and hope, you know, if it runs out, it runs out, and whatever bombing gouge. Guy averages 310 yards off the tee. He's pretty elite compared to the tour average. So Keith Mitchell, that wraps up my card, 4-man card. So I can't remember the last time I've done this, but I don't know. Can't remember the last time there was a competing tour on the same weekend with guys like Dustin Johnson headlining it. So there you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're still going to be heavily allocated. It's not about the number of guys. It's just about the number of your allocation and what their odds are. So, but yeah, that's why with that said, I only got 3 more all long shots, and I'm going to start at 115-1. I'm going with and I'm only taking him. I literally have no reasoning except his first name. I just love it. Rasmus Højgaard. Going Rasmus Højgaard, identical twin from the European Tour. Two starts on the PGA Tour, 18th finish, 6th place finish. Granted, 6th place finish was a Corrales, so that was a backup field during a major, but still 6th place nonetheless. The guy's made 14 straight cuts just overall. I think the last time he missed one was when he played the Shriners on the PGA Tour back in September. So it's been almost a year since he's missed a cut. He's just a better player than this number. If you look at the guys all the way up to 50, I think this guy's a better player. He's won a couple times over in Europe. It's really all my handicap is on him, because as I've been the first to mention, I don't really know much about all the Europeans all the time, but I got enough information to know that he's just better than most of the guys that are in this field. And on his two starts on the PGA Tour, he's been well. He's like an up and coming player. Why not just have your coming out party at the Canadian Open and get another win this year and your first on the PGA Tour? So triple digits.
Trivia question. I don't know if it's his twin brother, but he's got another brother on the European Tour. What's his name?
I literally just prefaced it by saying he's a twin. and then, yeah, it's like Nikolai or Nicholas or something.
Yeah, Nikolai.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he's the better brother of the two, hence why he's able to play on the PGA Tour. And his brother is not, but I digress. So he is the first one of my big long shots this week. Next, I'm going with someone that I've never bet before. But he does have a win under his PGA Tour belt. And that is Tyler Duncan at 150-1. Tyler Duncan loves these short positional courses. My brother just already mentioned the RBC Heritage Comp Course, finished 12th there. He plays really good at all these courses that are around 7,000 to 7,100 yards. Why? He really relies on his iron play. He's not long off the tee by any means, and he's not the best putter. But really good off the tee, gets himself in positions, and then heavily relies on that approach game. I just figured at 150-1 in such a weak field, why not give Tyler Duncan a go, who was popping on my comp courses? So 150-1. And last but not least, I'm going to 165-1. I'm going with someone who's just been in good form recently, and I don't really know much more about him other than he pops at certain times, and that is Steven Jägerbombs, 165-1. He's been playing some good golf other than, missed the cut at the Charles Schwab, but 38th, 6th place at the Wells Fargo, 15th at the Mexico Open. His irons are really starting to come alive, which is the difference for him. One thing we got to sweat is his just really poor off the tee play here. But, he's gained in two of his last three at least. He lost in his previous 12 before that, but that was when he was missing every cut. Sometimes you got to jump on form with some of these players. He was a big prospect, probably 2013, 2014, petered out off the PGA Tour, worked his way back up, via Korn Ferry last year. And now he's starting to play some good golf again. So maybe he found something. And 165-1 in this shitty field, I've taken worse bets. So, that's what I will take to wrap up my outright card this week. And let me just throw one more thing out there while I'm on it. I don't know if any of you out there have talked about it briefly, but how I like to take advantage of live betting. I have some good live betting options, and I think that a lot of these sites are slow with their algos to really they're slow in adjusting, so you can take advantage of certain things if you pay attention to it beforehand. So a lot of the time I'll wait on an outright. If it's an easy trip, for example, say I'm taking him 20-1, I'm still taking him no matter what, but if he's going off in the afternoon wave on Thursday and this course is a birdie fest and there's supposed to be no wind, I'm just going to wait till everyone in the morning wave goes 7-under, 8-under, 8-under, 9-under. And then I'm going to grab my guy at 20-1, at 25-1, 28-1 before he even hits a tee shot, stuff like that. So I don't know if it's for you, but just to throw something out there on this one course, we mentioned there's three par fives, and three par fives are all in the back nine at this course. So in the morning wave and the afternoon wave, I don't know if you want to see it, but I would look up your players. For example, I love Matt Fitzpatrick. He's going off in the morning. I ain't waiting to take him live because he's going off on the back nine first. He starts off on a par five. Chances are those holes are the ones they're going to take advantage of. So they're going to be under par and you're going to get a shittier number, right? Or whereas if it's the afternoon and you have someone going off the front, maybe you wait. And if people went low in the morning, they go 3-4 pars in a row, you're going to get a really good number on them in comparison. That's just how the algorithms work. The algorithms are not taking into account that the all the par fives are on the back nine. So just something to think about. I want to throw out there.
Yeah, no, I always feel the same way. Sometimes if I want to leave a spot open on my card, then I'll purposely do so and hope that that guy trickles. So I couldn't agree more with that take. All right, that wraps up our match, or sorry, our outrights. Let's jump into some full tournament matchups. I got a little three pack for everybody this week, mainly focusing on the top of the board. Bottom of the board is just going to be outlier after outlier weeks this week, I feel like. I'll start with Rory McIlroy. You alluded to him already. I wanted to bet him as well. Number just not reachable. Wanted to get exposure to him in other ways. I don't know how I'm going to be able to do that in DFS. He's probably going to be the highest owned guy almost in the entire field, at least at the top of the board. So I felt I could find him in a matchup, and I got him -127 over Cam Smith. You mentioned the reasons not to like Cam this week. Issues off the tee. And I feel like Cam, I don't know, like at this point in his career, he's a multi-time PGA Tour winner. I'm not going to say he doesn't have motivation, but he seems to show up just a little bit more in majors. Next week's a major, might not have, you know, that much focus or whatever you want to call that. I don't really believe in that bullshit, but I just think Rory, better player, better course fit. Give me that -127. Tyrrell Hatton over Finau, +110. I think that Hatton, I mean, I always love to look at these matchups, and Tyrrell Hatton is favored against, like, he has a better number than Finau does on the outright board, yet he's an underdog in the full tournament matchup. Tell me how that makes sense, especially for two guys that have only won like one or two times on the PGA Tour. Very odd to me. I'll take the underdog there 9 times out of 10, especially I think Hatton's still a fine course fit. I truly don't think the rough is going to be, you know, overly penile this week. It's not like in the US Open. I'm not too worried about it. Lastly, Smotherman, my boy Smotherman over Smelly Smalley. You can get Smotherman at +112. What do I call him? Anthony Smotherman.
Yeah.
That's my nickname for him. So Anthony Smotherman over Smelly Smalley, +112. Smotherman rates out beautifully here. Great with his approach play. Great with the long irons and solid off the tee. So I'm going to ride that as an underdog. That's my three pack. Little tall boy three pack.
Yeah, I actually have a three pack as well. I mean, I didn't like much going on this week, as we've already mentioned. Sometimes you got to save your bullets and ride into the US Open. And that's what we're going to do. But we're going to do it by going 3-0 first and foremost. And I'm starting with a lot of the scrubs. I don't know why. That's just, to me, I like to pick apart some of the lower tier guys. So I'm starting off first with guy you mentioned earlier, David Lipsky over Rogers. David Lipsky's numbers, they just profile out well how he's been playing recently. And on top of that, I don't like Patrick Rogers at these type of courses. I like him with wide fairways where the rough's not penile and he could just bomb it because he's a little erratic off the tee. And then, I mean, it's not the course fit for me, for him. So I want to fade him, Brandon, and I want to fade him, and I'm going to fade him. So
just do it, dude.
I'm starting off by fading him. All right. Then next on my fade list, well, let's not go that far, but next on my want list is, you know what? Everyone here is just saying how we talked about this whole Canadian thing. Oh, you backed a Canadian at least, but I haven't until now. We're going to Mackenzie Hughes -105 over Sahith Theegala. Everyone all on Theegala's nuts because he played great last week. Hughes has the home field advantage. Guy plays well at the Canadian Open, 2 top 15s in a row in his hometown. And he's been playing solid. 37th at the Memorial. I know he's not as good of a player as Theegala, but I like him again on these smaller positional courses. So give me Hughes over Theegala. And last, but certainly not least, we're going with Rasmus Højgaard -130 over Matthias Schwab. Schwab has been atrocious with his irons, like puke worthy, like really not even PGA Tour esque worthy. He's just relying on his putter. And guess where he's been putting the worst on the PGA Tour? On bent grass greens. At the Schwab, lost 4.5, AT&T over 2 on the approach. Consistent loser off the tee. He's lost 9 of his last 10 off the tee. So I will pick all over him with a guy who's made 14 straight starts. Or cuts. Why do I keep saying that? 14 straight cuts.
I was going to say 14 straight starts. Not that impressive. Could have missed all of his cuts, but understandable. Okay. Nice six pack combined. Well, I am not going to take any first round leaders this week. I think this is the worst type of event to try to handicap a first round leader. If you got one, share it, but I am out.
Oh, do I ever? I mean, cool. No pun intended here, but piggybacking off of just what I just said, honestly, I'm going Mackenzie Hughes. I think I'm trying to look right now. Sorry as I filter through it, but he goes off like almost one of the first ones tomorrow morning.
I could take that. I like Mackenzie this week.
I mean, and he's a streaky player. He gets pop rounds because he does things like chip in and
sink. 55-1. That's a good number.
Yeah, so, all right. I think I may have even saw 60 on one site we use, but regardless of the fact, oh, yes, I saw 66-1. So count me in for that. Nice. 66-1 for that's Mackenzie Hughes. And then I just have two long shots. One I already touched on as an outright pick. We're going Tyler Duncan, 100-1. He's going off early as well. I could see him having a low round. And last but not least, we're going a long shot first round later. I don't think I've ever been able to get one this long, but 150-1. 150-1. We're going to Christopher Gutterup. Last time I saw Mr. Gutterup, a little amateur who's just graduating. And I believe he got, I think it was one of the, let's see if I can find him in here.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah, well, just because I watch golf and you don't. He got into one of those little undercards during a major. One of those.
What's his name?
Oh, Puerto Rico. Finished seventh at Puerto Rico. He was leading going into the weekend.
This guy's name?
Chris Gutterup.
There's nobody. I don't see that guy in this field at all.
Gotterup.
You're saying gut, like G-O. Gutterup. What the fuck? Why is he on Fantasy National twice? One says Chris and one says Christopher. Okay, this is so weird. I don't even know how you know who this is, but all right, continue.
I just told you, so I'll repeat it again. Seventh place finish at the Puerto Rico Open. He was leading heading into the weekend. I was watching it. And he's like a top amateur coming out of college. So he got an exemption in the Puerto Rico Open. Now just got an exemption into the Canadian Open. He's a good player. He's young, but I could see him just – I mean, he was leading after two rounds on a PGA Tour event. Hell, he could do it again after one. Why not? At 150-1, he's going off in the morning. Give me Christopher Gutterup.
That hits, bro. Oh, my God. That'd be fucking nuts.
Yeah, I'd cut the tape on you on that one. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Well, lastly – typically talk about some props. Usually I only like to do props at like big events or majors, but another version of a prop is let's go over to the LIV tour. And I've got one outright play on that card. And we're going to go with Louis Oosthuizen at 11-1 odds. I'm not going crazy with this one. We still don't know exactly how this format's going to pan out, but what I do love about Louis for sure, one thing is that the shotgun start that they're going to be doing. So everybody's starts at the same exact time. That's beneficial for him because the guy, as we know, he loves to go low early and often. But aside from that, Louis outside the United States is the stone cold nuts every single time. Obviously, an open championship winner. So he's won a major overseas before. He dominates on the European tour. Every time he goes to South Africa, he dominates over there. So I don't see why anything would change. This field is fucking trash. The only guy I'd be worried about in this field, literally, is Dustin Johnson. Maybe him or Taylor Gooch. Like if I just tell myself that if they're playing a three ball and Louis just has to beat two of them at 11-1 odds, I would take that every time. And I feel like that's exactly the case here. I mean, this field is really that bad. So yeah, that's why Louis 11-1 LIV. Let's live it up.
Interesting. I got one pick as well, and it's not one person you named. So if you want to take him head to head,
I know who you're taking already.
Oh yeah, I thought about Louis, but I was like, I get a little better number, and I get a 14-1 with Kevin Bleepin.
Thought you were gonna say.
Oh, you thought I was gonna take Brent Weisberger, didn't you? Typical.
No, LIV. But I actually did. That's the only other guy I liked. No, I thought you were gonna take fucking Hudson Swafford for sure.
Oh, yeah, but his number got pounded down a little bit. I still do love Hudson Swafford. I may have to do a little sprinkle on him just because he earned me some live money.
Anything about the course. It's a problem.
I heard that I did actually a little read up on it. So I heard that it's just like a smaller course, more of a birdie course. Like the winner should be around like 15 under. and you must.
Oh, think, no, yeah, that's only through three rounds. I'm
trying to trick you, exactly. So he's like 15-ish under in three rounds, like, and it's shorter. And they said
it's a normal European tour course. Yeah,
they said there's like more room available off the tee, which is what gets me on Kevin Na because he sucks off the tee. So give me a little shorter course where he could get away with his erratic drives and a guy can get red hot. And no one loves money more than Kevin Bleepin' Na. So he was probably he was the first one that announced he was done with the PGA Tour. So no surprise. So that means he's gonna be the first one to win this tournament, baby. Kevin Na, inaugural LIV Tour winner.
I don't know, man. Louis Oosthuizen said that he was going to retire at the age of 40 until this came up. So he decided to play here instead. Said once he turns 40, his dream has always been to do something new and go live on his farm. You know how much a farm costs, Jared? If you're just living there with your family, you know, it's not cheap. This guy's going to be out there shooting for the stars, trying to win some money, put some money in the bank. So Louis split tooth Oosthuizen. All right. That'll be fun. I'm excited. I'm not excited to watch it. I don't think watching it's going to be fun. Maybe the last round. Especially, like, it's not even on TV. I feel like the coverage is going to fucking be awful. It's going to be streamed on YouTube and Facebook. It's the only way to watch it. I don't have any high hopes for it. I think it's going to be boring as shit. The team concept is potentially the dumbest thing I've ever read into in my entire life. You're going to see guys in teams of four wearing matching outfits, but playing against each other. It's just so stupid. Like, I mean, the only comparison I saw that actually made sense was that it's comparable to like F1, where technically you're racing against each other, but you're on a team, which I still think and don't really understand. That's why I don't really watch racing, but yeah, I just not a big fan of the concept. So we'll see, but hey, if I could bet on it, I will, just like I bet on NASCAR because I can. So, all right. Well, any parting comments?
No, just looking forward to the U.S. Open. So, I mean, maybe that's what I need to actually not care about a tournament for the first time.
Seriously, I'm in the same boat.
The last tournament I didn't care about was the Zurich, and I hit an outright. So I don't care about this one. So hopefully we copy what happened back then.
Yeah, we got two different tournaments to not care about. So that'll do it for this edition of Golf Picks with the Plotniks, the RBC Canadian Open 2022.
Yay.
Good luck, everybody.